Hello and welcome to Stages. I'm Regina Botros, and this evening we are talking with the Artistic Director of the State Theatre Company of South Australia, Mitchell Boutel. He's got 4 Helpman Awards, 3 Sydney Theatre Awards, 2 Green Room Awards for his work as a performer and director over the last 3 decades. He was supposed to be in Dance Nation at Belvoir, like the night that everything closed down. He was also in Mr. Burns, a post-electric play. He was in The Government Inspector, Angels in America, Strange Interlude, A View from the Bridge, Dead Heart for Belvoir, for Bell Shakespeare, The Merchant of Venice and Othello. He was in Urinetown, Meow Meow's Little Match Girl. He has a long list of works for the Sydney Theatre Company, The Resistible Rise of Arturo Uwe, Arms and the Man, Romeo and Juliet, Morning Becomes Electra, Tattoo, 6 Degrees of Separation. Look, I'm going to stop now because I'll be going on. Welcome to Stages, Mitchell.
Thanks so much for having me, Regina.
Thanks for coming on. So we will get into your online State Theatre Company of South Australia's Decameron, which I'm very excited to talk with you about. But before we jump into what's happening now, I want to get a sense of where it started life. Where are you from?
I was born in Sutherland Hospital down in the Shire, good Shire boy, and then I grew up in Maroubra, went to school in Randwick, and studied New South Wales University doing an arts law degree, but quickly worked out that the law was, I just wanted to wear wigs and capes really, so moved into theatre, and theatre was my major. Lived with 3 NIDA students during that time, and the rest was history. And since then I've been acting for about 30 years now, and directing for about 10. So it's been a wonderful and exciting journey.
Yeah. So were your parents creative? Was it there already, as a child, or was it something that...
I mean, they're not professionally creative, but very... My dad's a beautiful singer, and my dad was a milkman and a contract cleaner, and my mum worked for the TAB for many, many years. But both very, very funny people and incredible storytellers, so I do think a lot of that rubbed off on me, but still my dad is my fiercest and most astute theatre critic that I have in my life. He's 78 now, but I trust his judgment on things more than most actual reviewers, which is very useful.
Wow, that's fantastic. So when was the first theatre you went to see then? Was it as a child?
I think it was one of 2 things. It was either the musical Pippin with Johnny Farnham, Nancy Hayes and Ronnie Arnold at the old Her Majesty's Theatre in Haymarket, or it was a pantomime of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs at the now demolished Regent Theatre. It was one or the other. I was about 4 years old, I think, but I know with the Pippin one, it was just Dad and I, and we turned that corner into, Key Street in Haymarket, the lights were flashing, and I took off and left my dad for dead because I thought, I'm not missing this. So, and I've been a mad theatre queen ever since.
But you also sing as well, right? You're a tenor, so.
Yeah. I've been singing.
Is that because of your dad then?
Yeah, well, his dad was a, loved all the kind of crooners, Matt Munro and Frank Sinatra and Mel Torme. So often, and Dad used to sing Danny Boy to me to put me to sleep, and I'd go again. So I think it kind of got embedded there, and I was in the school choir and all school musicals, and I love singing, and it's something I love returning to, whether it's in musicals or cabaret or opera. But I haven't sung a lot this year as part of my job here at State Theatre Company in South Australia, but I'll ease it in slowly but surely.
So I'm curious to know, is there a particular review that your dad gave you that stands out as like, oh no, I have to change this because of he's said this?
Yeah. Dad always says his first criterion is it entertaining. If it's not entertaining, it's a failure. And he says it, it can still be provocative or edgy or dark or comic, but it has to be entertaining. He said if you're boring, you've failed. And he's certainly seen a couple of shows that I've done. He's like, yep, didn't fulfill the first criterion.
For example?
I won't mention that particular show.
Fair enough.
But it's something I think about here at State Theatre Company as well, about the notion of making sure that you give your audience a degustation of treats, but moreover, the thing you've got to do is keep them compelled. So that's certainly stuck by me, that thing. But I remember my sister saw a show I did at Belvoir on opening night. And, you know, I saw her across a crowded foyer, and as she fixed her earring, she went, "Well, not your best work." So they're pretty tough critics, my family. But I think that's good to have. I'd rather that than, you know, stage parents who thought I was wonderful. Otherwise, you'd never get better. That was the case.
That's right. So was there a mentor or someone? I mean, it sounds like your dad was quite that. But as you developed your career, so after New South Wales Uni, was there a point that things took off for you? And did you have a mentor? I mean, there are two different questions. We should start with one.
No, but it's interesting. That all kind of coalesced at the same time. I have many mentors, actually. Like at school, I had a fantastic speech and drama teacher called Una Smith, and a great music teacher called Rod Zitch, and a great English teacher called Mr. Keith Fallick. Unfortunate surname, but all engendered in me a really deep and passionate love for the arts and for theatre. And my first actual gig in Sydney was a show that Nancy Hayes directed called The Fantastics, that long-running musical from New York. And Tony Sheldon and Tony Taylor were in it, and they became lifelong friends to me and very serious mentors, and with such a deep love of showbiz and theatre. And so I had them very early on, and my first play at Sydney Theatre Company was 6 Degrees of Separation with the wonderful Jackie Weaver. All of them were very instrumental in my early kind of theatrical life. And I often say with 6 Degrees in particular, I entered from the audience at the Drama Theatre in this play, and I had to watch Jackie every night in what was quite a long season. And so I just watched her get better every night, and I thought, wow, this is like an acting school, watching a craftsperson like that really hone their expertise and their tools. So I was incredibly lucky early on. And you know, since then, great actors like Peter Carroll and John Gayden, and I've been very lucky to have lots of those people in my life as well.
So what drew you from being the performer to the director? When did that happen? I mean, you say about 10 years ago, but...
Yeah, I'll never give up performing, hopefully, because it's something I really love. But I guess... having worked with so many different directors over the years, and, you know, I've worked in film and TV a lot too, but primarily in theatre, it's kind of a great thing, isn't it? You're exposed to so many different methodologies, where directors are not really exposed to other practices because, you know, they direct their own show and the actors follow their vision. So it was great because I went, oh, I think I'm taking the best of all these wonderful people I've worked with, and I'd like to see if I could apply that as well, because... You know, there have been moments as an actor where I've gone, I think I know how I can make this better. It's not, you know, my performance per se, but also the work more largely. But when you're in another director's work, you're like, oh, no, I'm not going to rock the boat. It's their vision. But I really wanted to start kind of facilitating my own theatrical worlds. And it's been really great because it's a journey. It's not about control in any way, directing. It's about facilitation and providing a platform for people to do their best. And so you end up having these, you know, you feel like all these children that you love, all these wonderful people who you want to see them walk and talk. So it's great. It's a real, like, it's a very different muscle, but it's one that I've really loved pursuing over the last 10 years.
So what was the first thing that you directed? What was it that went, oh, no, I want to do this?
Yeah, I directed a little bit of stuff at NIDA, but the first kind of thing I directed with professional actors was a musical by Janine Tesori and Brian Crawley called Violet, which we did at the Hayes Theatre for Blue Saint Productions. And a beautiful show. It's about, based on a 1960s novella about this young woman in middle America who basically has a terrible disfigurement and goes on this bus ride across America in search of a faith healer to, you know, fix her. And she falls in love, or has this kind of love triangle with these two soldiers on the way. And so that was great. And a wonderful actress called Samantha Dottermade played the lead, and Genevieve Lemon was in it, and a host of other wonderful people. And it was a great experience. And from that, I kind of went, oh, I think I know what I'm doing here, and other people seem to think so as well, and from that flowed a lot of other directing jobs and kind of led me here. So I have much to thank the Hayes Theatre and Blue Saint Productions for. I've been was very lucky to direct that thing.
So Is there a particular production that you were in or directed that you kind of is a favorite? Maybe challenging and you rose above it, or do you have something in your canon?
I mean, the shows that have scared me the most have often ended up being the ones that I've, loved the most as well. As an actor, I worked a lot with Barry Kosky in the 90s, and that was thrilling. I mean, Barry would push you and push you, but I did a big Eugene O'Neill play with him called Morning Becomes Electra for SDC in 1998, I think, which was a huge challenge emotionally and physically. But those kind of things, they launch you into new places, which is great. And people like Marion Potts and Simon Stone and Neil Armfield, I've been very lucky to work with people like that who've pushed me along as well. And as a director, again, the things that I've been terrified of, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this, I like directing Porgy and Bess at the Opera House or Funny Girl, like the really big things that I had to do very fast. I just had to be super prepared. But luckily, when you work with great talent as well, you're blessed. But certainly I was, shitting myself on more than one occasion with those shows. Like, this is going to be a failure. I'm going to be discovered as a fraud. But when you get through those things, it emboldens you to do more, which is – it's a fantastic actress, writer, Anna Deavere Smith, who I love, she used to be in the West Wing and whatnot. She does a lot of one-woman shows, and she talks about – you want to keep moving on to the bigger project. Like surgeons want to move on to the next more complex surgery, like to extend yourself and to push yourself, and in that way also push your audiences. I think that's the thing that keeps us going as artists and just intoxicating.
So when you say I can understand the physical kind of, stress or experience, but tell me a little bit about the emotional ride of performing and the things that, how you prepare for that.
It's interesting actually, because you have to have an ability to switch off. But that notion of, different actors use different things, but the kind of Utterhagen emotional recall thing, that if you think about your dead cat in order to cry on stage and stuff. But I know with, for instance, during Morning Becomes Electra with Barry, which was so full on, it was, involved the death of my father, my mother, my sister, my mother's lover, whatnot. That was such a full on, and I eventually shoot myself in the head. I remember during that time, actually, I couldn't watch the news during it. I mean, the only thing I could bear to watch during the day were Pixar movies or something, because it was just, it took so much out of me. And Melita Jurisic, who played my sister in it, that I, even though you say, oh, I leave it at the theatre, and, the fact that if you're losing all that liquid and all that salt every night as you cry, I think it does have a kind of impact on your body. So you have to, you do have to take care. Now, I did a TV show called Border Town years ago for the ABC, which was similarly kind of full on emotionally. But I think once you get through a few of those, you get better at compartmentalizing self-protection and your own emotional kind of equilibrium outside of the work. But it's a tricky thing. But the other great thing about doing that is, though, you get to these fantastic catharses on stage, things that you've wanted to get out in life, or arguments you've wanted to have and never had. You can certainly use the theatre to exercise some of those demons.
I wonder about that, because you do things during the day and then you're on stage and then you're performing and you may have had that argument. Do you take that into the theatre, or do you personally, the character that you're playing takes over, or do you have bits of you there?
I think you have to have bits of you. Meryl Streep talks about any character you play has to be an extension of yourself in some way. You make certain adjustments and additions to get to that place, but essentially it's a dimension of you that you have to amplify. And I'm reading this great book at the moment, Mike Nichols, that fantastic director who, directed all those Virginia Woolf and Working Girl and Broadcast News and Angels in America. He talks about when he was directing theatre, he'd say to the actors, bring your day. So when you come to the theatre, bring the day that you've had along with you. So let that infect the work, because even though you still want to do, the words of the playwright and fulfil the director's vision, bringing something that's alive in you can actually spice up what's happening that night. And that's, the great thing about theatre too, that every night is a different show, and every night's going to have different impulses, and there's going to be a different electricity with the audience. I love that sensation. It's a sensation you don't get with film and TV. Like, you get a few takes and you're like, you can be different and lock them off. But the notion of that great thing about theatre, going, here's a problem that we're all going to think about for the next 2 hours or so and work on together as an audience and as a bunch of creatives, that's electric.
Mm. So how did you come to be the artistic director of the South Australian State Theatre Company?
Pure luck, I think.
Was that something that you thought you had in the back of your mind, something that you would like to do? Because does it not separate you from being the performer? Or?
It's interesting. Yeah, I've worked for like most theatre companies in Australia, but mostly for Sydney Theatre Company and Belvoir. But the notion of, and I've been on the board at Belvoir for 6 years, and watching Ralph Myers and Eamon Flack curate was really a great and educational experience. And my first ever acting teacher, Rosalba Clemente, who taught me at ATYP, while it used to be the artistic director of State Theatre Company over here. So just watching them over the years, I was like, oh, I really love that notion of putting together a season that might be have a kind of certain thematic, or that relationship between the artist and the audience is a really interesting thing. So I kind of applied on a whim. I didn't think I'd get it, because I thought, you know, like, there are people more skilled than me and more experienced than me. But I guess it was such a unexpected thing. I was very honest about where I wanted the company to go, and also because I love this company, and it's been through so many golden periods when Jim Sharman and Neil Armfield ran it at Lighthouse in the 80s, and Christine Westwood when she ran it as the Australian Playhouse. It was a real laboratory here of experimental and exciting work.
And you're listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros, and I am talking with Mitchell Boutel, the artistic director of the State Theatre Company of South Australia, actor and director in his own right. Well, let's talk about the Decameron. I'm very excited about this. Written in the 1300s during the plague, 100 stories, 10 playwrights, and each day a king is, or queen is enabled to tell a story and take everyone on a journey. You tell me, where did this idea start?
That's a pretty good idea. Arts South Australia here had a few quick response grants for major companies to work with independent companies, and there's a great unit here called Act Now Theatre who do a lot of great work with very diverse kind of communities and theatre for social change, essentially. So we said we'd love to work with you on this project. A lot of established writers who'd lost works, lost gigs and productions as a result of COVID, we wanted to give them work, but we also wanted them to be mentoring young, emerging, diverse voices as well. And then Emily Steele, who's a fantastic playwright here in South Australia, said, you know, the Decameron, the original Giovanni Boccaccio collection of novellas, was all about a gang of people who get out of Florence during the Black Death. They all go and hire a villa outside of town.
And live well.
Yeah, well, they cook and clean during the day, and each night these people tell these stories. And, you know, the Decameron is a very famous work in literature. So Emily said, wouldn't it be great if we use that as a kind of jumping board for these writers in South Australia? So we've got five core established writers, and each week a rotating pool of other emerging writers, so First Nations voices, Muslim voices, queer, non-binary voices, regional voices, other people of colour, disabled voices. So ultimately I think we'll have about 40, 50 kind of artists working on it. And each week, as you say, 10 stories from 10 different writers, and they'll be broadcast over the next 10 weeks starting this Friday night. Each episode has a central kind of theme or provocation taken from the original Decameron. And our version is called Decameron 2.0, like a new MacBook or something.
So what are some of the provocations?
They're a secret. You'll have to
I know there's lots of sex. I remember that.
Sex, any good work of art. we don't tell the writers until the week of. So, you know, if you'd read the original Decameron, you know, you'd probably pick up a few. But we give them a day to write it, and then it's given to the actors and the directors, and then we film it later that week. It's just very fast, and there's but essentially each piece or monologue is between 3 to 5 minutes. So we're going to end up with essentially almost 10 hours of television, which will, or 10 hours of video rather, which we'll broadcast through our various websites and social media platforms. But the hope is that eventually these stories form the basis of a new live theatre piece when they're all done. Not a 10-hour one.
10-hour, but no? Why not?
Well, why not? Indeed, maybe it's a huge durational festival show.
I love it. So tell me about some of the writers, because we probably up here in New South Wales don't know some of them. Tell us what's happening down there.
The core writers are Emily Steele, Ben Brooker, Sally Hardy, who works for the Australian Writers Guild here, Alex Vickery Howe, who's a wonderful playwright, works at Flinders University, and Alexis West, who's our resident writer artist at State Theatre Company. And Alexis is also mentoring all our emerging First Nations writers like Karen Ventura and Kiara Miller. And it's great. And with the emerging writers too, people like Manal Yunus and Nelia Valamanesh, really exciting, dangerous, provocative young voices. So it's going to blow people's minds, I think. And unlike most of the other digital offerings from other theatre companies, which have been wonderful, but primarily at home in front of the computer on Zoom, etc. This is, we've been filming this at our workshops, which is this huge kind of post-apocalyptic kind of industrial space, all socially distanced, but we've been filming it on proper film because we want a different quality to the other offerings that have been put up. And I think for that reason it'll have longevity too. It could become a thing that becomes a resource going forward, which is really exciting.
There's something about it as well, because of the immediacy of it, that it is reflecting the time now.
Yeah, absolutely. So even though the themes are kind of from the original Decameron, we've asked the writers to kind of frame them in a kind of how has isolation and how has lockdown, how has COVID also impacted these themes. So, you know, one theme might be hardship or something. And so obviously there's kind of COVID connections to that. So, yeah, there's some great funny stuff. Some like full-on stuff, but also some really wise and wry stuff that's coming out of the writers. Because it's so fast, they don't have time to judge themselves or second guess. It's very immediate, which is
cool. Yeah, and about overcoming the times through writing.
Yeah, because it's so weird for all of us, because you can't have a pity party and go, oh, you know, it's like it's hard for everybody. I mean, I'm lucky I've got a job still with the company, and there's many people in a far worse off situation than me, but we've all been impacted. We've all had to reframe the way we live and what we do. So it's a fascinating and kind of scary time.
So what advice would you give to anyone that wanted to pursue a career in the arts? This would be the last question. Some sort of inspiring kind of way to succeed or to survive. I mean, I think you've already answered it in the quote from your dad actually, but I'll let you answer it.
About 15 years ago, I started teaching at ATYP and NIDA and Australian Institute of Music, and it was great because you get to kind of – like I've always been someone who still picks up acting books and directing books because I don't think I know enough and I still want to learn more. So I was like, I don't have a right to teach anyone. But what I say to students and to anyone who's interested in listening to an old bugger like me is just see and do as much as you can. Like I'm lucky that work for me is a pleasure because I love the theatre. I love storytelling. And I've always tried to see and imbibe as much as possible. And they're very cheap ways of doing those things, particularly at State Theatre Company. We have various pay-what-you-can nights and a lot of discounts for young people. And I just think watching so much theatre over the years, and that's why I've missed it so much in the last few months, you learn what you love, you learn what you don't love. And then when you get up, whether it's, professionally or in co-ops or in your lounge room in front of your family, learning what works and what doesn't work and how you connect with an audience, just the more you can exercise your passion, the quicker you'll get there. Those people go, oh, I think I want to be an actor, but maybe I also want to be a biologist. I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen for you. The passion does need to be a total one, I think, because it's a tricky path financially, but if I was hit by a bus tomorrow, I would be happy. I'd be like, I've lived the life I wanted to live, and I've engaged in an art form that I think is meaningful and has some value in the world, which is not a terrible thing.
And has entertained.
Yeah, that's right.
Mitchell Patel, thank you so much for talking with me.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure, Regina. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. Thanks so much.
That was Mitchell Boutell, the artistic director of the State Theatre Company of South Australia. And their Decameron 2.0 will be online from Friday evening.